Morning, Reverend. You're about early?
This terrible heat, Captain. And then one of the men expressed a wish to see me. Poor souls. To be crammed between those fetid decks in weather such as this.
Aye. Well, the conditions are no concern of ours. And who knows, maybe Providence will come to their aid. Rain down manna and drink, maybe. Even part the sea to ensure an easy passage. What do you say to that, Reverend?
Why, Captain, simply that the ways of Providence are often like those of the peace of God, beyond all understanding.
Well, 8 o'clock near as gamut. So, if you'll excuse me...
Of course, Captain. The calls of duty. I fully understand those.
The Gloria Scott by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Simon Treves as Victor Trevor. The Gloria Scott.
No, Cerberus. Heel boy. Heel, I say. Don't move, sir. Don't move and he will ignore you. Do not stir. Cerberus. Cerberus.
Away, I say. Ow. Ow.
Oh, my dear sir. How can I apologize? Cerberus. Here, allow me. Now then, which is your college?
Yes.
Or perhaps first the doctor. Yes, I think so. This way, I beg you. Here, let me. Now, if you please, along here. Along here, dear sir.
Another winter upon us. Strange how much more depressing each one feels the older one becomes.
Watson. I've something which may both interest you and snap you out of your gloom. Something, too, that's the very stuff of youth. My youth.
Oh? What is that, Holmes?
That drawer, old fellow. The third one down on the right.
Yes, certainly.
Yes, you see the papers in the little tarnished metal cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Well, then, if you please... No, not the cylinder, just the papers.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, you know how you've often questioned me as to what turned my mind in the direction of criminal research?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, the answer lies in this document... And in the contents of that little cylinder you hold.
Really, Holmes?
Yes, indeed. In fact, they are what remain of my first case.
Ah, at last.
As you will recall, during my youth, I spent a couple of years at Cambridge.
Yes, I do remember you mentioning it.
Where one morning, while on my way to chapel, a bull terrier suddenly froze onto my ankle. It belonged to a man called Victor Trevor.
Come in.
Ah, Holmes, how are you today? Here, some fruit.
On the table, if you would, Victor. They tell me I may leave tomorrow. Certainly my ankle now feels as strong as it ever did.
Excellent. Then we may shortly have the masks, gloves and foils out, as you promised.
A boxing gloves, I think, Victor. I'd like revenge for the injuries Cerberus inflicted on me.
Very well. You know, Holmes, they say misfortune breeds strange friendships, and, well, although you have suffered, at least I feel that the unfortunate incident has led me to a kindred spirit. The interests we have discovered in common this last week...
Yes, it's rare for two lone wolves to come together.
My thoughts entirely. So, although it is rather early in our acquaintance, I was wondering, that is, I have, if you're agreeable, something of an invitation to extend to you.
Which was to spend a month or so of the long vacation at his father's house in the country.
And did you accept?
Ah. And now, Watson, I'd like you to open the cylinder, if you would, and read the contents of the note inside.
Ah, yes, right, Holmes. This tape. some years since these knots were... It's got it.
Excellent, excellent. And the message for them?
The supply of game for London is going steadily up. Headkeeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for fly paper and for preservation of your hen pheasant's life. What on earth does it mean, Holmes?
Literally. Why, Watson, I'm looking to you to elucidate that.
Me?
Yes, indeed. This time, you will play detective and attempt to crack the code before I reach the point in my tale where I must do it for you. And now to answer your earlier inquiry. Yes, I did accept the invitation, and at the end of term packed a bag and set off for the house, which was at Donnythorpe in Norfolk. You know Norfolk, Watson?
Why, no. Not really, Holmes.
No, nor did I. At the time.
So, Holmes, what do you think of our Norfolk countryside?
All steeple, field and fen, it seems, Victor.
Which means, however, excellent duck shooting and remarkably good fishing.
Ah.
And when I add my father has a small but select library and a tolerable cook...
Then I'm your man. Two of you live alone?
Indeed. My father is a widower and my sister dead. My father... Well, a man of resolution who's made his own way in the goldfields of Australia, amongst other places. However, here he is the local justice of the peace and puts up this fierce front, but in reality his leniency from the bench is well remarked. Ah, look, Holmes, the house. Oh!
It was an old-fashioned, widespread, oak-beamed brick building with a flagstaff on one of its towers and a fine avenue of limes leading up to it. And as interesting, in its way, as Trevor Senior. As his son had intimated, the justice was a man of little culture, but of a considerable amount of rude strength, both physically and mentally. A man who'd read little, I felt, but had seen much of the world and remembered what he'd seen. You have something?
I thought... If I took the first two words, then missed two, then the next two, etc., it began well, the supply for London, but then comes steadily up. Supply for London steadily up.
Not quite, Watson. Yes, old Trevor. Strong, charitable, intelligent, and without a care in the world. Or so I thought.
So, another glass of port, Mr. Holmes.
Nor can you evade the issue like that, Dad. I tell you, my friend Holmes' method of observation and inference are almost supernatural, and would amaze even you were he but given the chance.
Then here is his chance, laddie. Aye, and I'll provide it. So there, Mr. Holmes, what can you tell me?
About what, sir? For if I'm to give a demonstration, I must have a subject.
And so you shall, aye. And that subject will be, why, your host. That is, myself. So, Mr. Holmes, what, pray, can you deduce about me?
Well, there's not very much immediately, sir, except perhaps you've gone about in fear of some personal attack lately.
By all that's... For, indeed, there was a poaching gang that threatened to... How on earth...
Your stick, sir. Obviously, recently bored and lead poured into it. A formidable weapon, which argues a necessary one.
Did I not tell you, Father?
And then, by the particular flattening and thickening of your ears, I would venture you boxed a lot in your youth, yes? And, of course, your calluses bespeak a deal of digging.
Made all my money in the goldfields.
And visited New Zealand and Japan.
Oh, that's it.
The stuffed kiwi and the lacquer cow.
Well, Father, does not this surpass your wildest expectations?
Why, I...
And in most intimately associated with someone whose initials were J.A., who afterwards you were eager to entirely forget.
Father? Father, what is it? Holmes, help me.
Yes. Here. Lay him down. Come on, gentle now. And my coat, I think, were under his head, yes.
Holmes, shall I send for the doctor? How bad is he?
Shock. More than anything else, I'd say. Some water from the carafe. And it was any good, Victor.
Hello, Johnny. You all right? Thirst. This heat.
Aye.
So, what's a well-set-up young fellow like yourself doing on the good ship Gloria Scott? Bound for a holiday in Australia.
fraud, but for a debt of honor. I swear I intended to repay the money. And you?
Why, same as yourself. But for a quarter of £1,000,000, none of which was found, as you'll recall. Me being Jack Prendergast.
You?
I see you know the case.
Why, I do think I remember reading of the theft.
You'll bless my name before I'm done. I'm going to get you off this brig, my friend. Because some of that money I stole has been put to good use. In buying the crew. I'm the captain too, and I wanted him.
And it's mutiny we're talking of.
Some might call it that. Now, are you with us?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Good. Now, that cove on your other side.
Evans.
Evans. He looked like a sporting man, you think?
Why, if I understand you rightly, I think he does.
Then sound him. And let me know.
Guard! Guard! Call the chaplain! You hear me? I need the parson!
I'd not have thought a man of God would have anything for you, Jack.
This one has.
Father, for God's sake, what was it? Are you better? Holmes, what do you think?
That first we restore him to his chair. Yes. Then, here, Mr. Trevor, some more of this. And may I hope it was nothing I said that pained you.
Hanky. No, no, no. It was just age. Not as young as I was. Tell me, those initials, Mr. Holmes, how did you know? What do you know?
Why, simply that when we went fishing the other day and you bared your arm to draw that fish into the boat, I saw J.A. had been tattooed on the bend of your elbow. Also, that some attempt had later been made to remove it. Ergo, they had once meant something to you. Subsequently, you wished to forget them. That, my dear sir, is the total of my knowledge.
Oh. Well, what eyes you have, Mr. Holmes. And it is just as you say. I would forget. For you know, the ghosts of old loves are the worst ghosts of all. Now, what about 100 up in the billiard room? And a quiet cigar.
Any luck, Doctor?
Some manner of reversal, perhaps. Reading backwards from the end of the message.
No, no, Watson, do apply your mind, I beg you. Needless to say, after this exhibition of my powers, old Trevor, amid all his cordiality, always seemed to harbour a touch suspicion towards me. I tried hard to convince him I knew no more, but his unease was so evident I determined to draw my visit to a close. On the very last evening, however...
Well, we shall miss you, Mr. Holmes. No doubt about it. The trap is ordered for 9 tomorrow, is it not, Victor?
Indeed.
And I will miss you, Mr. Trevor, as I will the house and gardens. For look at that sunset. None of those in London.
No. And a great pity you... Hello. Here's May, looking rather flustered.
Excuse me, sir, but there's a man arrived. Say, Mr. Trevor Senior.
Oh, who is it, May?
It's just it, sir. He won't give no name, but insists he knows you. Wants a moment's conversation.
Well then, show him round, would you, May?
Yes, sir. Oh, here he comes anyway, sir.
Now, Holmes, another chance to demonstrate those mysterious powers of yours. Quickly, old fellow.
Yeah, small, shambling gait, dungarees, heavy boots, brown, sunburned face, hands held naturally half-closed. A seaman. A seaman who has fallen on hard times. You agree, Mr. Trevor? Mr. Trevor?
Dad? What is it? Are you all right?
Why, nothing, my boy, nothing. Just that for the moment, I imagined that... Well, my man, what can I do for you?
You don't know me?
Why? Why, dear me, it is surely Hudson.
Aye, so it is, sir. Oh. And 30 years or more since I seen you last. And here you are in your fine house, while I'm still picking my salt meat out of the cask.
Oh, you, remained at sea, then?
I've been beaten up and down many a long voyage waiting for a slant. And now just off a two-yearer in an eight-knot tramp and needing a rest, which I thought I'd get from Mr. Beddoes or you.
Oh, you know, then, where Mr. Beddoes is?
Oh, bless you, sir, I know where all my old friends are.
I see. Well, Hudson, go with May here into the kitchen and you will get food and drink. I have no doubt I will find you a situation.
Yes, sir, thank you kindly, sir. It's nice to be among friends again. Are these your boys, are they?
My son, Victor, and a college friend of his, Mr. Holmes.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance, gentlemen. And now, sir, I'll take up that offer of victuals, if I may. Then maybe you and I will have a talk about old times. Right, my pretty. May, is it?
Yes.
Well, then, May, you lead old Hudson onto the steward's parlour. Cheese, beer and onions, I think, to start with.
Father? Who on earth was that?
My first trip out to the diggings, my boy. I had to work my passage. And Hudson was a shipmate to Mr. Beddoes and myself. Yeah, now I'm feeling a little... So perhaps you'll forgive me if I leave you for the moment and retire. We'll meet, of course, at dinner, as usual. It is 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, is it not, Mr. Holmes, that you leave us?
And with that, Justice Trevor retired to the house, only to be discovered an hour or so later, dead drunk, on the dining room sofa. And the next day, with a feeling of some relief, I did indeed leave Donningthorpe. For I began to realise that not only was my presence now a source of embarrassment to my host, but also there was the makings of a very strange business in the arrival of the destitute seaman. How strange, however, I did not at the time realise. Then, 7 weeks after I returned to London...
Holmes, what if we divide the message up into four clauses, each separated by a comma? So, the first, the supply of game for London is going steadily up. Miss the next clause, take the following, we believe. Miss the one after that, take the next one. And for preservation of your hen pheasant's life, which gives us when we run them together...
Yes, Doctor?
The supply of game for London is going steadily up, we believe. And for the... preservation of the barn.
Then, 7 weeks after I returned to London, where I was working on a few experiments in organic chemistry, I received a telegram from Victor, suggesting I return without delay.
Up there! Holmes, old fellow, forgive me sending for you in such a peremptory and what must seem hysterical fashion, but, well, the fact is, Holmes, I'm at my wit's end.
Hudson?
Yes, no. Well, that is... You remember the fellow, then?
Of course, Victor. A seaman, was he not?
Yes. A seaman called Hudson. But that was not who we let into the house that day, Holmes. Who we let in that day was someone entirely different.
Ah, my pretty...
Mr. Hudson! Mr. Hudson, that's one of the master's best plates.
Don't you worry about old Trevor now, May. I'm the butler here, after all.
Butler, Mr. Hudson?
May?
Master Victor.
Hudson? Good Lord, is that one of the spode service?
Yes, sir. It slipped, I'm afraid. Mr. Hudson...
What the gals are saying is that I crept up from Leard and ran alongside her unawares. And as there was no fender...
I see. Well... No doubt there are replacement pieces, or at the worst we can contact the factory. And now, Hudson, my father wants some logs for the drawing room, I believe.
Then he'd better see the gardener, hadn't he?
Exactly.
Which I ain't anymore. Not since I had a word with your dad this morning, that is. Now I'm the butler. Butler Hudson. And Butler Hudson thinks he'd better fetch another bottle of port, as the last one has altogether run away through the bilges. Or there's a fierce pump on board, a-sucking somewhere, if you takes my meaning. So, good day to you.
No, Holmes. Who we let in that day was the devil, who has not given us a peaceful hour since. And the governor. Holmes, the governor.
But what power has he, this Hudson?
Oh, that old man is why I've sent so urgently for you. Faster! Faster! I tell you, Holmes, I would have knocked Hudson down 20 times over had he been a man of my own age. In fact, well, I suppose the present crisis... You see, Holmes, one day Hudson made a particularly insolent reply to the governor in my presence, and I turned him out of the room. I don't know what passed between Dad and him after that. All I know is the next day, Dad asked if I'd mind apologizing to Hudson. Well, I refused, at which poor Dad took himself off and shut himself up in his study, where I saw him later writing busily. And after that, well, looking as if the life were crushed out of him and his heart broken.
And Hudson?
Nothing until that same evening after dinner, when he condescended to join us.
Ah, Hudson, how are you now?
Not too happy. Aye, and had enough of Norfolk folk and their ways. Maybe I'll run down to Mr. Beddoes in Hampshire. You'll be glad to see me, I dare say.
You're not going away in an unkind spirit, I hope, Hudson?
Aye, well, I ain't had no apology yet from your son, Master Victor.
Ah, yes. Now, Victor, surely you'll acknowledge we've used this worthy fellow rather roughly.
On the contrary, I think we've both shown extraordinary patience towards him.
Oh, you do, do you? Very good, mate. We'll see about that. And as for you, Justice Trevor, well, you'll be hearing from me afore too long. Aye, that you will. There's such a thing as Lloyd's, remember? With their records of ships. Aye, and the folk who sailed on them. So be prepared.
With this strange speech, leaving the room, the house, and my father in a state of distress, it grieved me to see.
Victor, this Mr. Beddoes, what can you tell me about him?
Why, simply that he and Dad made their fortunes together in Australia, and then both returned to the old country, where they maintain a close friendship, though Beddoes lives in Fordingbridge, Hampshire. He's very much a hunting type. Sends Dad an invitation every autumn to shoot over his preserves. But really, I've seen Beddoes only once or twice in my life. However, it's a letter from Fordingbridge that's finally... Oh, Holmes!
Victor, what has happened? What letter?
Ah, Dad. Here you are. That article about the new game laws. I heard the doorbell. Someone from the estate?
No. Special delivery from Fordingbridge.
Mr. Beddoes?
Open it, my boy, would you? I'm not... Is it from...
I've no idea who it's from, Dad. For it makes no sense. The supply of game for London is going... although there is mention in it of that villain Hudson.
Well, let me see. Headkeeper Hudson. Fly fever. Oh, Lord!
Dad? Dad! May! Dad, what's happening? Oh, my God. May! Here, on the couch, Dad.
Yes, sir? Oh, poor Mr. Trevor.
The doctor, May. The doctor, as soon as possible. My father's had a stroke. We put him to bed, but the paralysis has set in, and I do not think he'll... Well, there was one thing, though.
Yes?
Dad was half conscious during the initial stages when I sent for the doctor. Which word, doctor, seemed to excite him greatly. Began waving his arms about, started to struggle.
How very strange. How very, very strange. But the letter, Victor, that caused so dreadful a result, what was in it?
Well, as I said, nothing. It's absurd, trivial, unless I've misread it.
Either that, my dear fellow. Ah, the chimneys of the house.
Yes, just round this bend and we're... Ah, look, the blinds are drawn. We're too late, Holmes. Too late.
We reached the house to be informed that old Justice Trevor had died soon after Victor had left for the station to collect me.
And no clue as to what it was all about. What had sparked the apoplectic attack?
Now, the old man's last and only words, according to the doctor, were a message for Victor, to the effect that the papers were in the Japanese cabinet.
Papers?
Well, in those circumstances, Watson, I did not want to start questioning Victor about papers or indeed anything else. I simply left him to ascend to the chamber of death while I remained in the study, turning the whole matter over and over and over in my head and feeling as somber as I ever had in my life.
My dear Victor, how can I...
No, Holmes, old fellow, I beg you. All I require is that you discover what is in this accursed, nonsensical letter. Here. Ah, May, the lamp on the table, would you, for Mr. Holmes? And then you will be needed, I feel, upstairs.
Oh, sir. The master. Such a kind man. A good man. Oh, sir.
On you go, May.
So, written on one side of a single sheet of grey paper and reading, The supply of game for London is going steadily up. Headkeeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for flypaper and for the preservation of your hen pheasant's life.
You see, Holmes, nonsense, as I told you.
So it seems at first sight, but I wonder if there's some second meaning buried in this strange combination of words. Perhaps a prearranged significance to such phrases as flypaper and hen pheasant. Yes, yet this would be arbitrary and could not be deduced in any way. I'm loath to believe that's the case. And the presence of the word Hudson, well, surely he must be the subject, yes, which means, therefore, Beddoes must be the sender. Now, if it's code. So, backward. Life, pheasant, hen. Alternate words? No. Reverse alternate? Wait. Oh, wait. What if we... And at that moment, Watson, as I looked, the key to the whole riddle was suddenly in my hands.
As it is in mine, Holmes. For you must know, I too have done it.
Indeed.
Indeed. Like yourself, I decided the message was about or from Hudson, and so decided to disregard the whole of the first half, up to Headkeeper Hudson.
Hmm?
Then, what struck me was the amount of hyphenated words in the remainder, which I considered to be quite suspicious. You follow me, old chap?
Oh, avidly,
oh,
avidly.
Good. So, if we take out the words Headkeeper, Flypaper, Hen Pheasant, and also remove the unnatural and tautological, and four, why, we are then left with Hudson, we believe, leave has been told to receive all orders for the preservation of your life. Which, I assume, was what Hudson was persuaded into by Beddoes when he reached Hampshire.
But that would hardly bring on a fatal attack, being told a man who you fear is now going to protect you.
Ah.
And which reading must also be erroneous for an even more mundane reason.
Which is?
Hen pheasant does not contain a hyphen.
Ah. Let me check. Why, bless my soul, I could have sworn. I mean, when you think of hen pheasant, well, that is, I always think of hen pheasant, though, of course.
No, Doctor, a good and worthy try. And indeed, given more time, but time is one thing you do not have now, nor I had then. So, if you'll allow me, I will tell you that the answer to the riddle is that every third word is used, mm-hmm, beginning with the first word of the message. Now, you try it.
The game is up. Hudson has told all fly for your life. Well, I'll be damned.
Well, Victor felt he was. For no sooner had I deciphered the letter than he buried his head in his hands and prognosticated disgrace staring him in the face, as well as having to bear his father's death.
Disgrace? But from where?
Here, Watson. These papers that Trevor Senior wrote when he knew the threat of exposure was upon him. The history of a convicted criminal.
Hudson, I suppose.
Justice Trevor, Watson.
What?
For as a young man, as one James Armitage.
Why, J.A., the initials you saw on his arm.
Indeed. Trevor was convicted of fraud and sentenced to be transported to Australia.
My God. No wonder he suffered a stroke when he thought exposure was upon him. Respected member of the community, justice of the peace.
Yes, indeed. For not only was it that he'd escaped his banishment and returned to England, but there were even darker crimes involved, all of which are set down in these papers and take place, for the most part, aboard the barque Gloria Scott, on which, in the year 1855, James Armitage, together with another 38 jailbirds and assorted crew and soldiers, found himself about to sail for Australia, but on a vessel that, in many ways, was not quite what it appeared to be.
Jump life in here!
Anchor up on a beach, sir!
Anchor up it is! Lay by the capstan bars, you men! Coil away the cable! Parson, a bit more about the wheel, would you?
Oh, of course, Captain. I am not in your way, I...
Not where you are, though why you want to experience a ship going to sea, and especially this ship.
Love of knowledge, Captain. And one never knows. But there is something wrong with this particular vessel?
This damn war, that's what's wrong with it, Parson. Ready with the topsails there!
Topsails ready to hoist away, sir!
The war in the Crimea.
Let fall the sheet home! Brace up sharp forward!
All the old convict ships have all gone as supply transports to the Black Sea. And we've been given these worn-out hulks from the China Run in their place, broad as dockyard moles.
Then are we not safe? Is there danger?
Helmsman, give her a little port to get her around the point. You hear, man? Port a little.
Aye, aye, sir. Port it is.
Mr. Mate, ease off the sheets and lee braces to windward.
Aye, sir.
Now then, Parson, safe? Aye, well, only because those rogues in the hold have neither the strength nor wit to take advantage. The partitions between the cells are as thin as a wind off the horn, and more weevils in the wood than any purser's biscuit. Now, steady as she goes, helmsman. Steady away.
Aye, aye, sir, steady as she goes.
Strange, though, to find a man of the cloth interested in these matters, Reverend Wilson. Not one of those reformers, are you? Come to spy on us?
Reformer, Captain? Oh, hardly that, sir, I assure you. No, hardly a reformer at all.
And nor was he. For what he really was Jack Prendergast's sometime partner and right-hand man.
Prendergast? I don't think...
Before our time, Watson. A notorious and vicious criminal of his age who had stolen $250,000, none of which was recovered, but part of which was utilized by this Reverend Wilson to bribe almost all of the crew of the Gloria Scott.
Good.
Wilson, having come aboard with the right clothes, a set of forged documents, and a box full of money for this purpose, which he used to such effect that in the end it was only the captain, two of the mates, two warders, the doctor and the soldiers that were not in the pay of the mutineers. So, on the surface, they were secure. However,
they suffered a setback.
One of the convicts below became ill and sent for the doctor.
Sick, you say, Parson? Sick?
Indeed, Doctor. A cough, some sweating, cramps.
And that's sick, is it, Parson? Well, sir, for your information, I see no sick men here. I see lazy men, cunning men, malingering men. But no man I would call sick. But I have seen sick men, sir, on the old Hector. Aye, and operated in the cockpit on a table where the stains of the port were indistinguishable from those of the blood.
Oh, really?
Where alongside that same table I've kept buckets of sawdust, into which I have thrown hands, feet, limbs, yards of entrails, while the men to whom they belonged lay in the tears, were leading their lives away for the country. And they, sir, were sick men.
Dear me.
And now, which is the idle rogue you wish me to see?
In here, Doctor.
This man.
Well?
It's ague, I think, sir. Perhaps if you examine...
How dare you, sir, attempt to tell the surgeon his business? There is only one thing I wish to examine here. Your feet. They will tell me more than...
Well, Doctor? A condition you have not come across before?
Indeed. I think I must go to...
Here, let us investigate. Well, well. A strange condition indeed. A loaded pistol. But you'll be used to those from the old Hector, no doubt. Stay where you are, Doctor. Here, you. Free Mr. Prendergast first and the others. Prendergast!
Aye!
The captain's going first, right?
Aye! The great cabin! And kill anything that gets in our way. From there, we'll secure the ship. Quickly now! Quickly! Quietly there! Wilson, what do you think? Is he in there?
Aye, Jack. But with the door locked, he's heard the shooting.
Clear away. Aye, clear away and leave this day.
Captain. Captain. It is the Reverend Wilson. The convicts are loose. There's a mutiny. Open up and we will stand together. I have a brace of pistols here. We will hold them off until the soldiers come. Oh, hurry, Captain, hurry. They will be on us any minute. Hurry, man! Two are better than one!
Reverend, thank heaven. Here, let me take one of those.
Aye.
Here, Captain. This one.
Aye, lads, well done. Now then, Armitage,
Step lively, man. This is no Mrs. Boarding School. Huh? Broach that locker there. Deeds like ours deserve a just reward, eh, Chaplain?
Oh, indeed, my son. Though remember, we are told that wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging. Still, little rage never did anybody any harm.
Except the captain.
Oh, never mind that, mates. Here, let me.
Aye, store clapper on your join tackle, Parson.
Never mind, Parson. There's many here have their running gear choked the luff with not shipped you. Why? Dozen brown sherry.
Here, that's crack the next of these.
Prendergast, we should get on. There is the militia.
Ah, still tucked up forward, Armitage. We'll finish here and then we'll see.
The skylight.
What?
The skylight, look out! Oh, God! Oh, God! Oh, God!
On the Straight for the deck! Follow me!
And follow Prendergast they did. And Prendergast somehow turned the day for them. Fighting like a raging devil, picking up soldiers and throwing them overboard as if they'd been children, shooting those who tried to swim. Until at last there were left only the remnants of the crew who surrendered, a couple of warders, the doctor, and the chief mate.
Poor devils. What happened to them?
Well, Prendergast argued that the job must be finished, that there should be no tongue ever left to wag in a witness box. And most of the mutineers agreed, though some, including Armitage and Evans, did not wish to see murder done in cold blood, sentiments which brought them within an ace of being shot. At the last moment, however, Prendergast relented and gave them a boat, provisions, a chart, and set them adrift for the nearest land 700 miles to the east and 600 to the north, and the instruction that if they were picked up, they were to say they were shipwrecked mariners. Yes. And it was from that boat, Watson, that the events occurred which caused the letter in your hand to be written and old Justice Trevor to be frightened to death.
Here, Evans, you take the chart. You've done some sailing, I believe.
Aye, but in former and happier times, Armitage. And not with Africa a lifetime to the east and Cape de Verde the same distance to the north. Hey, look, the bark, the Glorious Scott. She's begun to make way. We have stared, I wonder.
I don't think so, Evans. All that blood. The soldiers were one thing, but those others completely defenseless. My God, Evans!
The ship! It's vanished!
The arsenal has gone up. Can be nothing else. We made those safe, some.
Yeah.
Some may have escaped. You men, lay to your oars. The poor men, pull for pity's sake. The Armitage, you take the bow. Look for any sign of life among the wreckage.
Yes, right. Take way there, men.
Edison?
Fast. Done it. No, nothing. Pull, men. Pull, wait, though. Over there. Line across that creek. No, row, row now, men, as if your life depended on it. Row. Row. Right, steady up. Easier. The poor oars now. Come, bring her around. Right, here. Help me lift him aboard. Easy.
You recognize him, Armitage?
Oh, it's young Hudson. Hudson! Hudson! What happened? What happened to the ship?
The remnants of the crew had been put to death by the mutineers. Prendergast himself apparently cutting the doctor's throat. And hence, perhaps, the dying Trevor's stricken reference to a doctor. whatever. The chief mate was the last, but he, somehow, broke loose and sought refuge in the afterhold. The mutineers followed him in to find him, calmly sitting, holding a box of matches over an open powder barrel, and surrounded by another 99 similar barrels.
Good God. He touched them off?
Either that or a stray shot. All Hudson saw was a blinding light. And the next thing he knew, he was being lifted into the boat.
Gently, Evans, gently. The lad's exhausted.
You'll look after me now, Mr. Armitage, won't you? Won't you?
The next day, they were picked up by the brig Hotspur, who believed completely they were survivors of a passenger ship that had foundered. Whiskey, Doctor?
Yes, thank you.
There they were landed at Sydney, where Armitage and Evans changed their names to Trevor and Beddoes, and then went on to become prosperous and powerful men, who only in their lives made one more mistake.
They came back to England?
Yes, exactly. Hudson tracked them down somehow and decided to live off their fears.
First going to Trevor, and then to Beddoes. And, of course, it was Beddoes' note to Trevor that Hudson was prepared to tell all that initiated the fatal seizure here. Ah, much needed. I've never heard such a bloodthirsty tale.
Yeah.
But did Hudson tell everything? What eventually happened?
Nothing. And neither Beddoes nor the sailor were ever heard of again. Nor was any complaint from either party ever lodged with the police. Of course, inquiries were made, Beddoes being a man of substance in the neighbourhood. But Hudson had been seen lurking about, and it was simply believed he'd done away with Beddoes and fled.
Mm. But you don't think so?
No, quite the opposite. I believe Beddoes, a keen shot and a sportsman, took care of Hudson and then left the country, probably for Australia again. After his first adventure, I have a feeling someone like Beddoes would have made adequate provision for protecting himself should any further unfortunate circumstances arise which might threaten his peace of mind and liberty.
Oh, what a truly incredible tale. Transportation, mutiny, murder, powder kegs, fortunes, aliases, blackmail. Oh, I can hardly believe it.
Yes, well, Victor could. And it broke his heart. His beloved father. In fact, it affected him so much, he ended up by going to Terai, the tea planter. Well, I hear he's doing well.
And that was your first case. Mm. No wonder so little has seemed to surprise you in any of the succeeding problems you've faced. What a web of confusion and deceit. And you so young.
And here, my friend, are the papers, should you want them for your collection.
Oh, indeed I do.
Yes, then there we are. Yes, well, you seem a bit more cheerful now.
Yes. Strangely, I am, Holmes. You know, it's a sad reflection on humanity, is it not? That a man be cheered by a recital of such a catalogue of horrendous events. But, well, it has somehow banished the gloom which overtook me earlier. I wonder why that is.
Was it not Seneca who observed that being human, nothing else human, was alien to him?
Holmes. Terence, I believe.
Ah. Even so, the tale was interesting, Doctor. And its interest, surely, that is the very key to life.
In The Gloria Scott, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Merrison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Simon Treves as Victor Trevor. Old Justice Trevor was played by Terence Edmund, Trevor as a young man by Nigel Carrington, Hudson by Eric Allen, the Captain by Charles Millam, Reverend Wilson by Mark Straker, Prendergast by Alan Barker, the Doctor by Fraser Carr, and the Maid by Cyril Jenkins. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Gloria Scott was dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney and directed by Patrick Rayner.